Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the US withdrawing its diplomatic personnel from Yemen as it urges its citizens there to leave for fear of an impending attack from Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Charles Schmitz, the president of the American Institute of Yemeni Studies, joins us to discuss the narrow focus the US has on Al-Qaeda when Yemen's greatest security threats come from its own political and economic instability. Then we'll look into the remarks that the new president of Iran, Hassan Rouhani, made at his first press conference, where he called for serious and substantive negotiations to end the standoff with the P5+1 over Iran's nuclear program. Nada Hashimi, who is the director of the Center of Middle East Studies at the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver, joins us to discuss the new face on the same regime beset by rampant inflation, shrinking foreign reserves, and an expensive proxy war in Syria. Then finally, we will speak with William Gould, who arbitrated the 1992-1993 salary disputes between the Major League Baseball Players Association and the Major League Baseball owners. The author of Bargaining with Baseball, Labor Relations in an Age of Prosperous Turmoil, will discuss Alex Rodriguez's forthcoming appeal of his record suspension and possible lawsuits to come, as well as the apparent availability of illegal steroids and growth hormones that are readily accessible in the Dominican Republic, where most of the 13 suspended players come from. Joining us now is Charles Schmitz, who is the president of the American Institute of Yemeni Studies. Dr. Schmitz is an associate professor of geography at Towson University and has researched and written extensively on Yemen and its relationship with other nations on the Arabian Peninsula and with the United States, and he has just returned from Yemen. Welcome to Background Briefing, Charles Schmitz.
Thank you, Ian.
And on top of the closing of 20 U.S. embassies and consulates, you now have the warning from both the U.S. and the U.K. government to withdraw diplomatic staff from Yemen and urging their nationals, their citizens, to leave because of concerns of an Al-Qaeda attack that appears to be based upon an intercept of communications between the head of Al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and Nasser al-Wuhashi, the head of Yemen-based Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. I guess my first question, Charles, is given all of this furor over both Edward Snowden's leaks and Bradley Manning, who's on trial, here you have an obvious leak from the administration itself saying that they've intercepted the head of Al-Qaeda's phone call. So doesn't that give Zawahiri an advantage to know at least that his phone calls are being intercepted?
Yeah, I don't know that it was a phone call. They just said electronic communication. I do have a question as to how they would get this, and if they had got this information, why they're not, why they can't get these guys. I know that Al-Qaeda, number two in Yemen, was killed just a few weeks ago when he got on a phone to make a call to Saudi Arabia. Al-Qaeda knows very well in Yemen that they have drones circling overhead and that they can't make mistakes like calling on cell phones and whatnot. So it's a little bit strange. But even if that's true, I mean, there is additional information, apparently, that I've been reading about that says that the Yemenis claim that they know that there's a number of Al-Qaeda-affiliated people that have come from outside the country and are gathering in Sana'a. Again, if they know this information, why they're not getting them is a question. But that would seem to lend credence to the information that we're getting, that something is up in Yemen. And not only did the U.S. close its embassy, but it also had Air Force planes land in Sana'a early this morning to evacuate staff, non-essential staff, and also American nationals that wanted to leave, which is an extraordinary step. I mean, usually in Yemen, the Yemeni embassy has been closed quite often, actually, in the last 5 years or so since a large attack on the embassy in 2008 in Yemen. And usually they just fly out on commercial airlines, but this time they flew in special forces, so they clearly are very concerned about something happening in Yemen.
So I get very conflicting pictures of Yemen from people that have been there and travel there a lot and study the country, and the general perception both from the press and from the government that this place is a haven for al-Qaeda and an unstable country where Americans now are not safe and have to get the hell out. I mean, so what?
Well, you know, it is. It's true. There's a lot of fantasy and projection that goes on in Yemen. And Yemen, I would say this, that I noticed in the announcements from the State Department and from the British Foreign Office that the concern is not only over al-Qaeda's potential threat in Yemen, but also about the kidnappings. And the kidnappings are a very real threat. They're a threat that has been established already. Yemen, in the past, in the 90s, had a whole series of kidnappings that were done by tribal groups, which were rather harmless. I mean, you would be held by a tribe for a couple of weeks at most. You'd be treated as a guest of honor, and then you'd be released. And there were quite a few of these. And these were issues over, you know, a water project or getting some relatives released from prison or getting some government employment, some kind of support for the tribal area, something like this. But in the last year or so, the kidnappings took a nasty turn in that it appears that somebody, perhaps related to al-Qaeda, but, you know, just as well could be organized crime in Yemen or rogue elements of the security apparatus in Yemen, have been holding people for a long period of time, making threats, publishing pictures and videos of these people pleading for their lives, and then getting ransom, very high ransom, of up to $3 million is one of them. And so it's turned into a very nasty game. That's a very real threat. So there are threats to Americans in Yemen, but and Yemen is a place where al-Qaeda is active. But the number of al-Qaeda activists is very, very small, and Yemenis don't support al-Qaeda. Yemenis consider al-Qaeda to be a very small concern for them and a nuisance rather than a real threat. They have much larger threats facing them. In the form of a very unstable political situation and a very unstable economic situation. And the political instability has led to security concerns unrelated to al-Qaeda, concerns about groups that are blowing up the pipeline that provides most of the revenue for the Yemeni government, groups that are blowing up the electrical lines from the eastern desert, so the power is going out in the cities all the time, and attacks on security people inside of Yemen, that some of which are related to al-Qaeda, but many of which are related to the political instability. In the Arab Spring of 2011, Yemen was on the verge of a civil war where the military had split their loyalties between competing elites, and they had sort of squared off in the capital city to have a final battle. And the Gulf Agreement, brokered by Saudi Arabia and the United States and other Gulf states, kind of backed them down. Now they're negotiating. But the core issues haven't been resolved, and there are very big core issues, political issues in Yemen that haven't been resolved between the elites, between new elites now that have emerged. And they're all kind of waiting right now for the completion of a transition process. It's supposed to culminate in elections in 2014 to see sort of how these issues are going to be resolved and who's going to resolve Yemen, and who's going to rule Yemen in the future. And, you know, in this interim period, it's very unstable, and Yemenis are very worried about their future. And if you ask Yemenis, you know, what their concerns are, al-Qaeda is not on that list. On their list is the economy, is the security situation, you know, the one that's unrelated to al-Qaeda, the political instability, their political future. People are quite pessimistic and scared right now in Yemen. And Yemenis, in essence, the only gripe they have against the United States, really, that you hear, is the drone program. People really do not like the drones. The drones are, they see it on the one hand as a violation of their sovereignty, and another, it's very fearful. In the southern areas in particular, southern provinces of Yemen, where the drones are very active, in the eastern parts of Yemen, people fear what's going to come out of the sky. And in fact, today there was a report in the paper about the drones flying around Sana'a. They've been flying around Sana'a, and you know, people fear. People hide because there's these planes that are circling around, run by the American government, that may rain missiles down upon them at any moment. They don't know. So it's psychologically very disturbing. And Yemenis are just universally against these. And they, but this is they see as part of the U.S. government. They don't see this as something of the American people. And Yemenis are very, very friendly. When I was in Yemen just a few weeks ago, you know, people on the street would just invite me into their house, not knowing me at all, just seeing me as a foreigner. Well, they would invite me in the house, please, you know, come visit. Yemenis are extremely friendly, and they recognize that the American government is, and its policies is not the American people. And Yemenis admire the United States. They admire the United States for its freedoms, for its economic development, for its power. What they don't like is the way that the U.S. government is raining missiles down upon them in Yemen.
Again, I'm speaking with Charles Schmitz, who's the president of the American Institute of Yemeni Studies. Dr. Schmitz is an associate professor of geography at Towson University and has researched and written extensively on Yemen and its relationship with other nations on the Arabian Peninsula and with the United States. And he's just returned from Yemen. Four suspected al-Qaeda members were killed by a drone strike in central Yemen, according to tribal leaders. And you mentioned that the one thing that the Yemeni people seem to agree on in terms of the United States is that they're opposed to the drone program. And it would seem that if the real problems are what you just related to us, which is political instability and these warring factions amongst the elites, you'd think that a little diplomatic muscle and a little bit of economic help would solve that problem. How can you worry about a country becoming a failed state and becoming a haven for al-Qaeda? Wouldn't the first priority be to bring about political stability? I just don't understand how the U.S. priorities seem to be on killing people with drones as opposed to knitting together this country, which is, you say, is predisposed to liking America.
Yes. The United States has played a key role in brokering the agreement that brought about the transition. And it was, in fact, the threat of a civil war that spurred the United States and Saudi Arabia to become very active in trying to negotiate some kind of a peace agreement among the elites. The issue is that the peace agreement among the elites isn't going to resolve the problems that Yemen face, or it's not assured to. The people on the street that were demanding fundamental change in Yemen, which may be necessary in order to bring about, political and economic change, they have been sort of marginalized, and the old elites that used to rule Yemen before the events of 2011, they're essentially back in power. There's only so much that the United States can do, quite frankly. The United States can't really change the Yemeni economy. It can help. And it does. I mean, it does give some economic aid and assistance and whatnot. Where the United States could really play a role is in applying some pressure on the neighboring Gulf states and Saudi Arabia to change some of their policies. For example, to allow more Yemeni workers into the Gulf. The Gulf is opposed to this because they don't really like the Yemenis. They see Yemenis as a security threat. But the reality is that Yemen is a security threat to them right now, and that allowing workers into those areas would substantially reduce unemployment and help the Yemeni economy. It's something that the Gulf opposed to, and the United States kind of lets the Gulf get away with this. The United States could play a much more helpful role in trying to broker something like that, rather than trying to give economic loans and stuff like this. The United States doesn't have a lot of money to throw around in that sense. The Saudis play a much larger economic role in Yemen than the United States does. So the United States could play a leadership role there. In terms of the political settlements, it's simply going to take time. I mean, these are big issues that Yemen is facing. They had a secession movement in the south. They've got another armed group in the north that basically has succeeded. It has political and military autonomy. It doesn't want to succeed, and it doesn't want to rule Yemen, but it wants to control its own area. These are serious challenges that the Yemeni, it's going to take time. It's going to take much longer than the next elections to work out. And so I think from the U.S. perspective, what needs to happen is a long-term thinking about economic and political stability in Yemen, more along the lines of a 10- or 20-year plan rather than the usual 2- or 3-year plan that we hear about.
So, Charles Schmitz, What are the security threats that the Yemeni government and military face then? Because the Yemeni military helicopter was shot down yesterday by militants, I believe in the same area where the Al-Qaeda, so-called Al-Qaeda people were killed by American drone missiles. That's the Marib.
It's the Eastern Desert.
Yeah.
Yes, Marib, the Eastern Desert. That's right.
And the general was killed along with the and he was the head of a unit that was protecting oil facilities in that neighborhood.
Right.
So you mentioned economic sabotage against the government. So how much is that going on, and who is responsible for trying to sabotage and weaken this government, not to mention killing its generals?
Yeah, the people that brought down the helicopter were not Al-Qaeda. They were there are groups, tribal groups, and other groups in the Eastern Desert, which is a very sparsely populated area, but it's the area from which the main oil for the north comes from, and it's also the area where the electrical generation plants all are. So all the electrical lines for the electrical grid come from that area. So in terms of the infrastructure, it's a very vulnerable area, and there have been constant attacks. Since 2011, there's been constant attacks on the electrical and on the oil installation, on the pipelines, and the government seems incapable of stopping them. And who's behind it? That's a very good question. In Yemen, it's often assumed that the former president, Ali Bellasar, who wants to play spoiler and show this government can't control and position himself or his family for a political comeback in the next set of elections, he's often accused of it because these people seem to be well-funded and very capable of eluding the military out there. And the Yemeni military can be very capable if they put their resources together. They were the ones that defeated the Al-Qaeda insurgency in the south in a matter of a month or so, very quickly. It's a big question as to how these people are able to continually attack, particularly the electrical lines all the time, and the power go out in the capital cities all the time. Why is it this is able to keep going? They seem to have powerful political backing.
And you think it might be the Salaf? Yeah.
This is in Yemen. It's assumed that the former president is behind this, or people were affiliated with the former president, because they clearly have some kind of backing.
Right. Well, he took the U.S. and the Saudis a lot of effort to get rid of that guy, right? He got blown up and went to Saudi Arabia for medical care, and he seemed to be extremely reluctant to leave powers. So
and he still plays a big role in Yemen. He is out of power, but his people and people who support him still have prominent positions in the government. And there are a lot of people in Yemen who also support him or people affiliated with him. So he and his people are still a very important political force inside of Yemen. And so what that shows you is that, Yemen's big security concerns and the sources of its instability are not related to Al-Qaeda in that sense.
So just given that following the sudden closure of 20 U.S. embassies and consulates on Sunday, you have the U.S. and U.K. governments withdrawing their diplomatic staff from Yemen and urging their citizens to leave the country. If you were still there, you're just back from a couple of weeks ago, if you were still there, would you leave?
I might think about it, or what I would probably do is simply restrict my movements, be very careful, which I did anyway because of the kidnapping, but I would be extra careful. I would stay away from major symbolic places like the embassy or, major government building or something like that. And I'd probably, lay low. I'm not sure that I would actually leave. I might just, lay low for a while before going.
Well, just in closing, though, it seems to me that what you're telling us, though, is that it could be the former president who's a greater security threat to the country than Al-Qaeda, and that his power, long protracted power struggle, which we thought had ended, may not have ended, and that the priority, as far as most Yemenis are concerned, is for their own country to get its act together, to bring about political stability, and then some economic stability will follow, and that here we are spending all our money shooting drones at people in the desert, and that seems to be our priority. So is there a disconnect there?
Yes, there is a bit of a disconnect. I just would add one thing, Ian, that it's not just the former president. The issue is that there are many competing blocs And none of them can dominate. So you have the former president, you have the main opposition part of the Islah party associated with the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamic groups, you have the Houthis in the north who are completely separate, who are an armed group who control territory, and you have the Southerners in the south, in addition to other groups. So it's not just the former president, it's many different groups that are in political and military competition in Yemen. That's what lends to the instability. Yes, the United States has received a lot of criticism, repeated criticism, for a long time about its focus on terrorism. And within Yemen, they often criticize the United States for its, you know, overarching concern with security to the expense of other concerns. And, you know, the Yemenis kind of say, well, if you'd like us to cooperate, you know, in the concerns of Al-Qaeda, because Al-Qaeda is not a real big concern for the ordinary Yemeni, then you need to show that, you know, you're interested in the ordinary Yemeni concerns. And you hear this over and over again. And the feeling is that the United States really is not. The priority of the United States is combating Al-Qaeda and security. And even if you go within the realm of security, what the Yemenis say there is, what the United States should focus on is enhancing Yemeni capacities rather than sort of overreaching and doing what the Yemenis could do. And there's a question about the approach of the United States, its exclusive use of kinetic force, versus, you know, many cases where, you know, the guys could have been captured and brought to trial. Why is it the United States prefers to kill people rather than, you know, bring people to trial and use due process? And this is particularly the case with al-Awlaki, Anwar al-Awlaki.
No.
You know, he was a U.S. citizen that was assassinated, and, you know, why wasn't, on the basis of him being an al-Qaeda ideologue, right, or some other basis. We don't know what the basis was, right? And so the Yemenis are suspicious about this. They would like to see rule of law established. This is what they need for their own country, but they would like to see the United States apply it to itself as well.
Well, Charles Mason, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
You're quite welcome, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Charles Schmitz, who is the president of the American Institute of Yemeni Studies. Dr. Schmitz is a professor of geography at Towson University and has researched and written extensively on Yemen and its relationship with other nations in the Arabian Peninsula and with the United States, and he just returned from Yemen. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back talking about the new Iranian leaders' press conference today.